Welcome to the Kern County Animal Services Commission. I appreciate all of you in attendance on such a hot night, so appreciate it. First item will be roll call.
Commissioner Geary.
Excuse.
Commissioner Blackburn.
Here.
Commissioner Taggart.
Here.
And Commissioner Christopher.
Here.
Thank you. Okay, so the first item is approval of summary proceedings from last month. Are there any discussion or any changes or corrections? I didn't see any. That looked really good. Okay, need a motion to.
I will make a motion to approve last month's meeting minutes.
And
I will second that.
All in favor?
Aye.
Thank you. Let's see here. Consent agenda.
Mm-hmm.
We had a number of emails that I heard that have already been handled by the department. So I have no questions on any of those. And do you have any questions on any of those?
I don't have any questions.
If there's no questions, I'd like to get a motion to receive them on.
Okay, I'll make a motion to receive that file.
And a second.
I will second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Thank you very much. Public presentations. This portion of the meeting is reserved for persons to address the commission on any matter not on the agenda, but under the jurisdiction of the commission. The commission may respond briefly to statements made or questions posed. They may ask a question for clarification, make a referral to staff for factual information, or request staff to report back to the commission at a later meeting. Also, the commission may act to direct the staff to place a matter of business on a future agenda. Please state your name and address for the record before making your presentation. You're limited to 2 minutes. And by the way, I know it's a small group, but I'm going to say the same thing. Please turn any electronic devices to off or silent, please. And if you have to talk, please take that in the hallway. So first table, anyone? Okay, nothing. Okay, second table.
Okay.
Michelle.
I just have a couple questions. Can I do that up there?
Okay.
Okay.
We'll try to answer.
Michelle Vallejo, Snipe 3311. I didn't come last month, and I heard that the commission passed the ordinance. Is that
true? Well, yeah, we agreed to send it on to the board.
Okay, so it passed through here. Okay.
Right, and
second question, what happened to our last commissioner?
I'm not sure.
Are we having,
Well, Debbie's out.
Debbie's out.
Was, but Christina is, I'm not sure.
Okay.
I think she stepped down, but I haven't been given
no confirmation.
An official notice.
Awesome. Yet,
so I don't know.
Those are my questions.
Oh, okay. That was easy. Thank you.
She's
okay, got that.
She's got that.
Okay.
Thank you.
Oh, can I
come? There's one
of you. I'm so sorry. Bumped you.
There you go.
Oh, my first meeting.
My name is Marnie Ranger, and I live at 93305.
I'm sorry, can you repeat your name?
Oh, yeah. Marnie.
Thank you.
M-A-R-N-I-R-A-D-E-R. I just moved here in November, bought a house. I come from Van Nuys, the San Fernando Valley. And we live up on I guess it's College Heights, off river, near the college. And love the neighborhood, very happy to be here and be a homeowner. And first of all, I want to thank you, because I know everybody here cares about animals, right? Or we wouldn't be here. And my daughter and I, we have three dogs, five dogs, and three cats. We love animals too. But when I first moved here, I was really shocked at how many loose animals there are and how many dead animals I saw on the roads. It's very concerning, you know, and I'm on the neighborhood, it's called Nextdoor app, and somebody was like, is this a rescue animal app? Because everything is about rescue animals. We met Heather through a neighbor, and so we help as many animals as we can, but yeah, I just want to know, like, what's the plan? Like, this is, it's shocking and sad and concerning, and we used to try to catch every dog we saw, and now we're like, oh, this isn't possible, you know? We Critters Without Litters is doing amazing work, especially with the feral cats. You know, we just want to be part of the solution. And so,
well, I would appreciate you being here. Welcome to your first meeting, and all your questions will be answered in due course.
Yeah.
Just by being here.
Yeah.
And you'll learn the ropes real quickly. And we need more people like you guys. So welcome.
Thank you. And my daughter wants to be a vet.
Yeah.
Excellent.
We need them.
More best, that's for sure.
Yeah. Anyway, thank you. Thank you all.
No. Thanks for being here.
Hi, I'm Heather McCrary, 93305. Sorry, I hate public speaking. I have a question. I was wondering, I know that the prices of like SNAP tests for rescues has gone up since the pandemic. I was wondering if anyone might be able to tell me the process for like SNAP testing for parvo and distemper at the county shelter. I don't know.
For public pets or for
adoptable pets? Because like coming to the meetings, I know several people adopted with parvo, distemper, and the little skin thing too. So I didn't know, like, because I know it's shut down some rescues I work with, transports, because it infects other places. So I don't know if it's possible to like SNAP test puppies or make sure that like they're well coming out of the shelter, or is that just like a very expensive thing? Do you only test if they have symptoms or a sick mom? Or I was just wondering, because I have a foster that adopted a puppy that had parvo, and that completely shuts down their yard. I'm glad that the puppy's going to live. The shelter was wonderful in aiding them in medicine. But for me, it completely shuts them down, and fosters are very hard to come back. I don't know. Like, I'm reaching out to people to find out how to disinfect a yard, a pool, how long. If anybody can answer any of those questions, I'd be grateful to know when they can start helping again. So I would never tell someone don't go to the shelter, but like it's stressful that so many people are getting like sick animals. So I do appreciate that y'all backed it up with like vet care to like surrendering the puppy, treating it so that they're living. I was just curious as like preventative measures with SNAP testing.
You're in the county, right?
Yes.
You're in the county. Okay.
Yes.
Nick, I don't know if you answer that question.
Yeah, so is the question, do we use SNAP tests?
Like, what is the procedure with SNAP testing? Yeah, I know if they're probably ill, you do it, but because they SNAP test her once they brought her back, but she left sick, you know.
Right, so we test dogs for parvo when they show symptoms of parvo.
Okay.
Which is, sometimes it can be too late if it's already spread to kennel mates.
Well, there's a few reasons for that. Number one, the cost is significant, but number two, a dog can have parvo and it doesn't show up on a test. It's not until they're shedding the virus that the SNAP tests produce a positive.
Okay.
So not only would it be costly, but it wouldn't be accurate. Okay. Until we see symptoms, that's when the tests usually show up hot positive.
And has the price also gone up? Like, I know
every bit of items we purchase has skyrocketed in cost for veterinary care. SNAP test is one of them, yes.
Okay. Thank you.
And I think that as far as your yard goes, I think you're looking at about a year. You may be able to speed it up. But I believe parvo can stay in your yard for a year.
That's what I thought. Water, too? Like swimming?
I do not. I don't know.
Okay.
Honestly, I've never seen how many pools in Tehachapi.
Oh, yeah.
But don't give up. Maybe we could foster a dog that's been vaccinated.
Yeah. Thank you.
This is your first meeting,
right?
No, I missed the last 2 months. First time speaking.
Oh, I see. Okay.
We all do.
The other thing, too, is if you are fostering other dogs where there's been parvo, if you have them fully vaccinated before they're in there, you're good.
Yes.
Because the vaccines really work with that. So.
Yes, thank you. Yes.
Okay. Hey, Heather.
Hi.
Give me your name, Jill, phone number. I'll have Lisa speak with you about some of the things that we usually recommend for parvo.
Thank you, Nick.
Because this is such a question. I didn't think of this before we did the whole ordinance nightmare, but it came to my attention recently. Someone I know was away at Bible camp with her small children. Their dog managed to get out of the yard while they were gone. It had a good collar on it. She said getting the collar off was near impossible. And it had, in big letters, the dog's name and phone number. They can't find the dog. So, and they've gone to the shelters every day. They go on the website. They go to the shelters. They've done everything. There are posters everywhere. They're on the lost and found pet thing online. Somebody took this dog. Mm-hmm. And there's a little girl that's crying because somebody thought she had a nice dog. If you go on like the Nextdoor apps, you're always seeing, I found this dog. And somebody says, I'll take it. So, what is this? Is there like some sort of a thing where if somebody picks up my dog and keeps it and I find out they have it, do I say, Mr. Colin, can you come out here and get my dog from these people? I mean, there's got to be some sort of penalty. That I would consider that to be theft. So something, we need to put something in effect to let people know that because you found a dog doesn't mean it's neglected. Stuff happens. Somebody I know had their house broken into, and when they broke in the door down, the dog escaped. So, you know, things happen. So I just was kind of like, you can't just find a dog and keep it just because it's a nice dog. So we need something to fix that.
I think there was a question in there.
Yeah. What is the... I can't think of the word, but... You know, is it... do I call animal control and say these people have my dog, or do I call the police and say, we're got to go get my dog, or do I just load up my gun and go get my dog?
B or C.
So, if it's my dog and you kept my dog, my gun and I will be on your door. My dogs are my children, and I will fight tooth and nail.
So, animals are considered property in the state of California.
Correct.
So it's property theft, and animal control. We don't handle property theft. That's the sheriff's department or Bakersfield police.
So would it need to go into an animal services ordinance, or would it just be already covered under?
Well, property theft would be
under property. Okay. Because that's what I was wondering. So.
But there are various laws that require somebody to take certain steps when they find a loose animal.
Right.
And if they don't follow those steps, well, then that's, again, it's theft of property.
Right.
That's not something that we have authority for.
Okay. I was just wondering about that. So if anybody sees a golden retriever that's been shaved down.
Oh,
I'm sorry.
No.
There's a little girl that
is
really
it the
wants
one with the red collar?
I can't remember. But the picture online is the dog's got his feet up on the little girl's shoulders.
Okay, thanks, John. Anyone else from City 3?
Oh, yes.
Terry?
Well, this is 3.
Yeah, well, he didn't call it, though, and you jumped up there. I said something to that effect. So we hadn't been called yet, John. You jumped up anyway.
So, I'd like to go in order.
Terry Kahn, 93561. Okay, a few years ago, California rep for, you won't like this, HSUS, the Humane Society for the United States, came to this meeting and said we were targeted. Her name was Fern. I thought she was a plant. Last month, we got to experience the results of their targeting. HSUS spends millions in California lining the pockets of legislators. If you all aren't getting payouts from them, then you ought to demand it, because you are working to support their woke animal rights agenda. A few days after that vote, I brought in a litter of foster kittens. They all made weight, so they stayed. I was offered another litter to take home, and I realized that I had to refuse. I can no longer be a foster for animal services because I cannot support the repugnant behavior of its leadership. I have saved lives, but if those next little lives have no place to go, then their deaths are on you.
Anybody else from table 3? Okay, seeing none, we'll come back to the head table. Next item is public presentations.
Yes.
Oh, sorry, staff announcements. Kirk Cullen.
You want to see it?
Yeah,
here,
you can read it.
Go ahead.
Exactly
what it said.
Good evening. My name is Nick Cullen. I am the director of Kern County Animal Services, also known as leadership at Kern County Animal Services. I'd like to go over a few items in the director's report. There's some supplements that I've provided today that I'll give an explanation for. The first supplemental is something that's way higher quality than I can produce. So all this is a nationwide analysis of the first quarter of 2023. Nationwide, so these are animal shelters that participate in the Shelter Animals Count Initiative. It's a database for shelters voluntarily submit their intake and outcome data. So I think there was 4,000 agencies nationwide that participate, 7,000. But one of the important things to point out, and it's an interesting document to go to see the trends nationwide. This is not Kern County, this is not Bakersfield, this is the country. But out of the entire nation, the first quarter of 2023, which is January through March, what they refer to as non-live outcomes for dogs, which is euthanasia, doubled in the first quarter of 2023 compared to 2021. So that's just another way of me trying to express to everybody in the audience and the commission that what we are dealing with right now is a crisis that's affecting communities across the country, which isn't a good thing. It would be easier to digest if it was just Bakersfield and Kern County. This is something much larger. The trend of increased animal intake in shelters is alarming, and it's, like I said, it's happening across the country, which is much more difficult to digest because that's going to take a much larger solution. The other supplemental is just some data and some graphs that I wanted to point out. The first page shows the fiscal year dog intake for Kern County Animal Services from fiscal year 13-14 through the most recent fiscal year. Fiscal year is July 1st through June 30th of each year. So this fiscal year that just wrapped up on June 30th, Kern County Animal Services received 9,721 dogs. And if you look at the graph, that's the most dogs we've received in any fiscal year since 2014-2015. And that, remember, that's a fiscal year, so this is a period beginning July of 2022 and ending in mid-2023. And if you look at that graph, you'll see the trend as it was going down from fiscal year 14-15 all the way through to fiscal year 2021. That's the downward trend in total dog intake. That's what we want to see.
And this is just you.
This is just the county, correct? So, you know, that's clearly headed in the wrong direction. The next graph, which is, this is a little bit more recent, so this is going to be January 1st of 2023 through July 1st of 2023. So you've seen the fiscal year, which started in June of 2022. This is just the first 7 months of this year. We've taken in 5,105 dogs, which was the most dogs we've taken in the same that same time period in any year since 2014. So I'll remind everybody, for those of you who don't know, in 2014, that's the first year the county was on its own. So prior to 2014, we were partnered with the city of Bakersfield. And so in 2014, our intakes were about half what they had been the year before. So what we just saw in the first 7 months of this year is more dogs coming into this shelter than in any first 7 months of any year in the past 9 years. If there is a bright side, which is tough to get to squint to see a bright side, the bottom line is euthanasia. And you'll see the big difference that in 2014, when we brought in 4,993 dogs, we euthanized almost 50% of them. 2,292 dogs were put down. You fast forward to 2023 when we've taken in more dogs than we did in 2014, and we're putting down about half of them. So the bright side is that we're working harder now than we were 9 years ago to find live outcomes for the dogs that are coming to us, and it's overwhelming. 5,105 dogs, like I said, it's the most dogs we've seen in a very long time. That's pretty similar to what other agencies are seeing as well. I spoke to Shafter today, they're seeing the same thing. Spoke to the city of Bakersfield last week, they're seeing the same thing. And then the data that's in the shelter animal count is pretty indicative of what we're seeing. We live in a county that if you lived here long enough, we've historically had troubles with euthanasia in shelters. We've historically had troubles with just the volume of dogs that are entering our shelters. Cats as well. Dogs get most of the attention, unfortunately. I don't know why. Cats are a much bigger problem. But anyway, it's always been a problem. So when we see a trend nationwide that's ticking up a little bit here or there, it's going to be much more severe here. And so what we're seeing is an indication that it's similar to what is being seen across the country. You know? There's another graph here that just shows dog intake that's broken down by month. So it's April, May, and June. And the yellow line is April, the blue line is May, and the green line is June. And those are the last 3 months. Just those 3 months, we took in 2,610 dogs, which is the most in any three-month cycle that we had seen in the past 9 years. And the alarming thing is that the number keeps increasing, right? So we would hope to see some leveling out, and we're not seeing that. Each month, we're seeing more. And the overwhelming majority, I can't even explain or stress the importance of what is coming to us, it's puppies. Litters and litters of puppies. 90% more puppies we've seen this year than in 2019. 90%. There's a lot of dogs being produced, and they're all showing up in the shelter. And that's not the only indication that there's a problem. There's another graph here that says that there's a blue line and a red line. It says 1-1 through 7-1. The blue line is the amount of dog bites that have occurred in the community. The red line is the amount of aggressive dog calls that we received through dispatch. We've investigated 836 dog bites from January 1st through July 1st. It's the most dog bites that we've investigated since 2014.
Wow.
The calls for aggressive dogs, 513 in the first 7 months of 2023. The most aggressive dog calls we've had, again, in 10 years. So not only is the shelter overloaded with dogs, not only are our rescues overloaded with dogs, there are more dogs on the streets that are causing problems. So this is a much larger issue than I think sometimes we understand. Sometimes I understand. And then the last graph is just more of the field data, which is it's black and white, but January 1st through July 1st, which is... these are calls for loose dogs. It's not aggressive dogs. It's just people calling us saying that there's a stray dog that's running loose in my neighborhood. And again, that's 1,784 of those we've received in the first 7 months of the year, which is the most patrol checks and non-confined dog calls we've had since 2014. So again, it's not just what we're seeing in the shelter. It's reflecting in the environment. Community too.
Well, I know myself at work, we've noticed a huge uptick in aggressive dogs and dog bites and that too. I don't know what the issue is per se, but I know we did definitely see that a huge uptick in that.
And the other, everything has this ripple effect of problems, right? So more dogs in the community means more dogs in the shelter, means more bites that we're investigating. But it also means there's more puppies in a community that is ripe for parvo and distemper.
Yeah.
More puppies mean more parvo. More parvo means more parvo in the shelter. And I talked to the city of Shafter today, and it's outrageous how many dogs that they're seeing with parvo being presented at intake. And that is one of those things that we would normally see parvo frequently, but it's every day. And that's why it's such a challenge to try and catch parvo before it goes home. Because if it's asymptomatic and we don't know about it, it's going to incubate after it leaves our facility. And so it's always just trying to pay attention to symptoms in the shelter so that we can do a test or evaluate a little bit better. And when we still don't have a veterinarian and we have no RBTs, it's tough to catch. It's just a state of affairs right now, but like I said, we're really trying to do our best. And it's there are a group of volunteers and community members right now that are helping us and other agencies more than I think at any point in the past. There is more community support to help solve the problem than there has ever been before. And that's a good thing. You know, we have volunteers that have created just a social media page, which I'll get to in a minute, to promote some of the dogs that go out on our Doggy Day Out programs. And that's all they do is promote that program. I have a volunteer who runs that program. She comes in every Saturday, and all she does is our Streets of Bakersfield program, because she knows that she gets 25 dogs out for the day. They're going to get marketed, and they're going to get a home. You know, and it's been a long time since we've had that. So, you know, along with a lot of the chaos that we're seeing, you know, there's a lot of community support to try and be part of the solution. There's some people here that want to be part of that solution, too. So I did want to touch on a few things. I added a few more bits of data into the director's report. You see, we did only 3 spay and neuter clinics in June. June and July and August, we usually slow down with spay and neuter at the end of the fiscal year, so we have to make sure that we're not exhausting funds that we don't have. Our end of the fiscal year, like I said, is June 30. Beginning of the fiscal year is July 1st, so at that point, there's budget hearings that are happening, which are happening right now, by the way. And those budget hearings, we usually can't spend significant amounts of money until the budget is finalized in August. So we slow down for spay and neuter, but thankfully we had some funds that were left over, and I'll get to the, we had some funds that were donated. We had a $50,000 donation and a $20,000 donation, and all of those donations allowed us to do a few more spay and neuter clinics. So 57 dogs at the East Bakersfield Clinic on the 1st, another 40 dogs on the 8th, and another 45 on the 19th, and that's strictly from donations. The next page, it says, "This children will save us." I just wanted to touch on that, that there was this wonderful young lady, she's, you know, 10 years old, I think. Her name is Olivia. She came into the shelter last month with her grandmother, Becky, and her brother, Augie, and they had gone and sold lemonade from their house, and they made $200, and they, it was really good lemonade, too, by the way. I had some of it. So they came and brought us a donation, and it was just awesome to see. She must be a veterinarian, by the way. a lot of kids want to be veterinarians, but what we did is we took her donation, and we made some calls, and we got a commitment from the SNP bus. And the SNP bus said that they would do a spay and neuter clinic for $200. And so because of Olivia and Augie and Becky's, and I know there were some more family members in there that helped out that I'm forgetting, but because of their work selling lemonade and their altruism and donating to us, you know, about 27 animals were spayed and neutered just from that donation. Then we had a couple of calls from people in the community that saw the story and wanted to match their donation, and so Olivia and her family had to drive out to these locations to pick up another $200 in cash and bring it back to us. But I thought it was a really good story, and that's this lemonade advertisement that's in Spanish and English right there. That's what that was. It's purely donation based. I'll touch on spay neuter. So we wrapped up the fiscal year. We spent $491,615 in spay and neuter. This fiscal year, it's the most spay and neuter funding we've ever spent. And I was in front of this commission around 11 months ago, and I was telling you that I was at a budget hearing, and the spay and neuter funding was up for debate, and there was a question about whether or not we would be able to spend $250,000 in spay and neuter funding. And so I said we could spend that. We could probably spend $400,000. In fact, I said we could probably spend $500,000. And so that's the county committed to appropriating $400,000 for spay and neuter. And you'll see that we spent close to $500,000. And that's just in the county funds. We also had grant funding, donations that I just talked about. We probably spent $650,000 on spay and neuter just this year. Because that's the only way to get out of the problem that we're in right now. I did want to touch on, there's a page 9 that says adoptions year to date. Not going to really touch on the adoptions or rescue, but 381 dogs, 10 cats. A lot of cats actually to be returned to owner. We don't need to see that many. About 8% of all of the dogs we've received have been returned to their owner. 8%. Still mind blowing to me. Norris Elementary did something really cool for us. They wanted to help the dogs get homes. So I know the pictures are tough to see, but their students at Norris Elementary drew pictures. We gave them kennel cards to dogs, and then they drew pictures of the dogs, and we hung them on the dogs' kennels, and some of the pictures were really adorable. Some of them really looked like the dog, and other ones that did not look like but the ones that looked, that did not look like the dog at all, those dogs got adopted pretty quickly. So they had something to do with it. But they were really cool kids, and they had a really cool thing. And it always makes us happy whenever something like that happens.
Go Knights!
Streets of Bakersfield, we had two dates in June for Streets of Bakersfield. Shameless plug, we have another Streets of Bakersfield this Saturday. Some of you have participated in Streets of Bakersfield before. Page 13, I wanted to point out that there's a couple of volunteers who run a Facebook social media Streets of Bakersfield page. It's called KCAS Doggy Day Out on the Streets of Bakersfield. It could really use your support just to share some of their posts, because what it is when people come in and they take a dog out on the Streets of Bakersfield, the reason why it's so beneficial is because it markets the dogs in a way that we can't. You know, there are people that are members of our community that have networks of social media, friends and family that we can't tap into a lot of times. And so when they take these dogs and they take pictures and they post them on their own social media, it's like an algorithm that we can't tap into. And so what these ladies are doing is that they're providing a Facebook page for people that take a dog out to show what they did with their dog. You know, they took them to the Starbucks, they took pictures, they wrote a bio, and that's where all this information is. So it's called KCAS Doggy Day Out on the Streets of Bakersfield. If you get a chance, friend that or whatever it's called, social media, I don't know what it's called. Favorite, friend it, follow it, whatever. And share those posts, because people post the dogs that they take out for the day, and the more shares that gets, the more the dogs are seen. We had 76 live outcomes on Thursday, just this past Thursday. And live outcomes just means anything that's not a euthanized dog. So it's foster, it's adoption, it's rescue. And a lot of those 76 were because people saw the dogs that were taken out on Streets of Bakersfield the Saturday before. So if you can, follow that page, share the posts from people that are taking the dogs out, because it really does save lives. We had a number of adoption specials. We're always out in the community Fridays, Saturdays, and Sundays for adoption events all throughout the county. Follow us on Facebook to find out what the next date is or what the next venue is. I did want to talk about the Pet Food Safety Net program. For those of you who don't know, during the pandemic, we started a pet food program, which is provide small amounts of pet food to people that are struggling to make ends meet. For the most part, it was run off of donations for a long, long time. And we would do it every Wednesday and every Sunday. And then it's a heavy load for volunteers to take on. And so we scaled it back to every Sunday. And then with the budgets being what they are, we looked into it. It was costing us about $17,000 now a year because we ran out of the donations that we had. And so we just can't afford to do that as often as we were. So we're changing the Pet Food Safety Net program to the last Sunday of every month. It's on our website, and there's an advertisement that's in this brochure. But if you know anybody that comes and gets pet food on Sundays, it'll be every Sunday here on out. The field services report, there was a page 19, has the field services data. I just wanted to point out, I included a couple more bullet points. Our field services officers in June, they ran 1,277 more calls this year than they did last year. which works out to about 213 more calls for service a month, or 53 more calls for service a week. So again, not only are we inundated in the shelter, but there's more calls for services in the community than have been in a long time. That's it. That's all I got. And I can answer any questions.
Commissioners, any questions?
I'm wondering how many things last Saturday up in Cassidy at Mountain Bowl.
We did not adopt anything else. We didn't adopt anything else. Actually, I think we did three events. And all three of them were adopted. I'm not sure.
All of Tatchby or just different?
No, areas? Just the polling was just the one in Tatchby. I think we were down at the at this building, and then we were at Tatchco.
Well, it was hot.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I just want to compliment you and the department on being so innovative on all your promotions that you've got going on. You've got, these are all multifaceted. Thank you.
We have a really good promotions guy.
I mean, you've got a lot of things going at one time. I like the fact that you had one that was the fees were waived between June 12th and the 17th. Did you have much success during that week on when they're waived? I mean, I know you advertised that on your webpage, and so you get a lot of people come in and adopt during that time when there was no fee?
Yes.
You did. That's good. I've lost track of the grants that we've had. But you mentioned you had a $50,000 donation and a $20,000. Can you tell us who those people were, or is it something that you can't?
I spoke about it last month and the month prior. I don't remember his name.
It was a private party?
Both of them, yeah.
Okay. As far as grants,
that same individual who donated $50,000 to us donated $50,000 to the city of Bakersfield and to the Bakersfield SPCA.
Wow.
Isn't that something? Wow.
I sure hope they're all using it for spay and neuter.
Okay.
Yes.
Is Petco, are we in any kind of a grant cycle with Petco at this time? Is there anything going on that we're getting any money from them?
Are we getting money from them?
Yeah.
I told this commission, we got a $95,000 grant from them earlier this year. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. We're at Petco every other weekend. Our cats are at Petco stores. Yes, Petco's a good partner.
$95,000, I mean, that's worth publicizing more than once, so that's a lot of money. So
yeah, we did a press release and I did some media on it, too.
Okay.
Yeah.
Anyway, a lot of great things. I mean, I know all the new statistics are bad, but I mean, you're pitching in a lot of different arenas, so I compliment you, and the lemonade thing was very innovative. That's great. And then you had somebody that matched your donation, I guess, so that's wonderful. Let's see what else. Oh, at Norris Elementary, how did they adopt any dogs? I didn't really understand if you did. Did they adopt any dogs that day?
There wasn't a day. They drew pictures.
And then okay, the pictures. All right. So they didn't really go out there with the dogs. They drew pictures of the dogs.
No, we gave them copies of the kennel cards.
Oh,
I got the dogs' pictures, and then they tried to mimic the
dogs. Okay. Wow. That's great.
Their idea, too.
Their idea, okay. I think that was it. The aggressive dogs kind of bother me. I don't know what's going on there. More dogs, I guess it's just a percentage of dogs that are aggressive, and you have more dogs, maybe that's the reason, but I don't know. The statistics are a little bit alarming, but I know you're doing everything possible. We're done with questions up here. I'd like to open up to the first table.
I've got a couple questions. Now, these dog bites you're talking about, are these dogs that are owned by somebody, or are they feral dogs that are just running around? And have you seen an increase since the whole COVID pandemic, or is this something that the trend has been growing over time?
Did you say plandemic?
Yep.
Yeah, sure. So when we talk about dog bites, there is no differentiation between between owner and feral or pack of dogs. Bite is a bite. We're the local rabies control agency, which means we investigate dog bites. So that data, that figure there, is just a total amount of bites that we investigate. It's not broken down by own dog versus stray dog. The majority of those calls are owned dogs that bit people.
Okay. So are you seeing an increase in rabies around here with this type of thing? Or?
There hasn't been a case of rabies in dogs for 90 years or more.
Oh, pretty good.
Cats is a different story. There's been cases of rabies in cats. But
oh, really?
Yes. Yeah, for some reason, the state of California doesn't require a cat to have rabies vaccination. But
that's gross. Okay. That's all I have.
Yeah, I think you asked if we saw a rise in...
Has this increase in all of this been since COVID happened, or is it something that's been going on for years, and the numbers have just been going up, or...?
No, this is since March of 2021.
Okay. Next table, any questions?
Not well. This is along the lines of this kind of morbid, but it didn't occur to me until just now. Because someone mentioned this years ago, and I'm certain that you are in contact or have information across the country of how bad it is in shelters, right? I was thinking it was bad years ago, and now it's really bad for everybody. Have you seen anyone, shelter director-wise or supervisory-wise, who like just bit the bullet and said, we're back to catch and kill, and we're just annihilating everything and starting from scratch? Has anyone like come to that point that you know of?
Not that I know of. Okay. I mean, I'm not in contact with, you know, 7,000
people. Well, I don't know if you, like, heard, or if this is, like, a thing.
No, but I would find it, you know, disturbing if there
someone
was a director of an organization. I was like, yeah, let's just...
That's not an opinion, or I think we should do that. That is just something someone mentioned years ago.
But I would say that when there's this many animals, and we were just talking about this today, when there's this many animals in the community, there's consequences to that. More parvo and distemper is one of those things, you know. But there's always a potential for more animals, domesticated animals, interacting with wildlife and becoming rabies positive. So we're on the alert for potential rabies infection in a dog. You know, that's one of those things where you don't know sort of what to expect when there's this amount of animals that are in our community. You know, got to be some, you know, simmering, chaotic risk when there's this many animals out in the community. I mean, it's not to say that there hasn't been this amount of animals before. There has.
Right.
But just to see this spike recently, it's a concern. So I know that there are shelters that have had to depopulate, as they call it, but it's because of illness.
Okay. Not like disease. Population depopulation.
No. Okay. Not that I know.
Just
thank you. Okay,
I just want to thank you. You were talking about our puppy, right? We just adopted a puppy from the shelter on Fruitvale, and she did have parvo. She was only 8 weeks. But we saved her. We pulled her through. And a woman named M. Clark at your...
Megan.
She was wonderful. She gave us the food, the medicine. This puppy hates us now because we force-fed her for a week with her medicine and her food, but she's so sweet and cute and happy and healthy.
She'll forget.
Yeah, she's doing great. So,
thank you.
Yeah. Yeah, we, okay. Morning and night, and we were not going to let this puppy go. So, anyway, thank you. I thought it was wonderful.
That's the challenging thing about parvo is we're reasonably successful when we can treat. It's, you know, supportive care, hydration, yeah, and nourishment. That's it.
Yeah.
You know, there was a time not that long ago when immediately parvo was a death sentence. Mm-hmm. It's not the case anymore. Yeah.
You have a question?
My eyesight isn't great. Where can we find all the rest of the dates that you guys have for the Streets of Bakersfield program?
So we don't post all the dates because if we don't have the team to stand it up, mm-hmm, then we don't do it. But it's usually every other Saturday. So there's this Saturday, and then there'll be 2 weeks from there and then 2 weeks from there. But it's always on our Facebook page. If you go through the director's report, you'll see some of the what the little marketing advertisements look like. All you gotta do is just follow our Facebook page, and we'll usually promote it 7 to 10 days out and a couple days that week too. But it's only on Saturdays. It's from 8 a.m. to 3 p.m. It's hot as heck. So we make sure that we communicate to people, take every precaution that you have. I mean, we really considered at one point, do we want to continue to do Streets of Bakersfield because it's so hot outside? But instead of doing away with it, it was such a benefit to the dogs, we just trust the people, and we moved it up until 8 a.m. so that you can pick up the dogs at 8 a.m. now and bring it back by 11 or noon if need be.
And then just one more question about the pet food safety net.
No.
The people who go there, do they have to, like, do they have to show something to show that they're, like, in need of help?
We don't ask any justification. The only caveats that we have is we give out a maximum of 6 donations. They have to be spaced 2 weeks apart.
Okay.
So if you come to us and get a donation of food, you only get to do that 6 times. And then you can't get new animals because we've had people that have come in, get a donation, and then the next week they've gotten a new dog and they need more food. And so, no, we don't do that.
Okay.
Okay. Anybody else on table 2?
I do. I kind of want to piggyback on what you were saying. I think what you were saying is, like, are they catching animals and euthanizing them immediately anywhere? Was that?
Yeah. Has anyone, like, gone back to that place because population is out of control and they can't save animals and everyone's overwhelmed and someone just decided to go back to, like, I didn't know if that had happened. Someone had mentioned it years ago that their idea was to just, like, annihilate everything and start from scratch, so I didn't know if people actually did it.
I was educated by an animal control officer. I vaccinate dogs of unhoused people in the riverbeds, and there's a situation where there's a pack of aggressive dogs that have been trained to attack people. And we've caught 2 of them. A wonderful animal control officer you sent out to locate them. Another unhoused person trapped the aggressive dog, but in their camp, which, like, it was not easy to get to. Your officer was amazing because you can't drive to it. There were 5 animals in the camp, and they tied another aggressive dog to the...
I know, dinner. I remember that call.
Yes, yes. And my thing was like... Well,
Officer Johnston.
Yeah, I was like, well, you can't... Like, you don't just put... And I get now, why can't on our words say that dog has hurt someone, or she was like, no, there's a whole process. And it's like, okay. And in that situation, we weren't able to... because there were some... We didn't get them that day. But I think, like, with the aggression that we're seeing, too, it's like, it's just in numbers. Like, those things are going to increase. But I also had a comment. I think it was, like, 4 months ago at this meeting... Somebody mentioned that there was, like, a lack of literature in Spanish and access on the website. I see that's, like, absolutely changed. It's on the website. It's here. Like, I just want to commend whoever's working on that because that's, like, education, I think, to both communities. I forget the percentage in Kern County that's Spanish-speaking mainly, but I think it makes a big difference to be able to, like, educate everyone. So that's, like, I commend whoever has updated that.
Thank you. That was an improvement. You're right about that.
Yeah.
Anybody else on table 2? Yeah. Okay. Table 3, any questions? Go ahead.
Yeah, piggyback on a couple of things. Your slide about the children will save us. That reminded me of, you know, the horror days where we were doing 25,000 animals a year that were being put down. At that point, we decided the children will save us. And there was a big push to educate, you know, to do a program in the schools. Where we went and taught responsible pet ownership and also, you know, how to approach dogs to keep kids from getting bitten. And her name was Patty, I think, that was putting it together. And we had all kinds of, you know, we all volunteered to go into the schools and we had all kinds of educational materials. What happened to that? Actually, you know, doing the ground up, you know, starting with the kids, because kids have a big influence over their parents. And, you know, that seems like it would be a pretty easy way to start. And we had a lot of volunteers. It just didn't go anywhere.
Yeah, so I think you're talking about the PAWS program, Patty, with Halt Rescue.
At the time, she worked for the city. There was the one running the city line.
I know that Halt Rescue started a program called PAWS. Mm-hmm. You know what it stands for.
Yeah, this was back in, you know, in the 2000s, you know, when it was so bad.
Pet Awareness Week for students.
There you go.
Okay.
And she more or less piloted that, I think. You know, I remember her, we were having a conversation. It was never a county program. It was always a volunteer-based program. And because she was a teacher, you know, she had a school that was willing to listen. I spoke at some of those assemblies. The problem at the time was, this is 2018, 2019, even 2017, it's tough to get the schools to agree to any curriculum that's not
state-approved
or that can't be tied to something. They have goals that they have to meet, and if the curriculum can't be tied into those goals, then they can't consider it. And so it was always a tough conversation to have with schools to apportion any time, let alone a week, to animal welfare education. But the good news is we were contacted by the folks at a new version of PAWS. What does it stand for again?
Pet Awareness Week for Students.
There you go. And we're starting it again. So I think we just got an email from a teacher who is developing a curriculum. She's got 10 or 12 schools on board. And the curriculum looks fantastic. She found a way. It just took somebody to take the time to create a curriculum and be able to be an educator to tie it into the school's requirements. And so I took a look at the curriculum today, and it looks really good. And I think she's shooting for next year to start that.
Next school year.
Yeah. So it's going to be coming back.
Okay.
Much stronger than it was at any point before.
That would be great.
Yeah.
Give us a call, because our Obedience Club in the past has gone to libraries and schools and done, like, I don't know what they call them anymore, but the little before they have all the kids come in. It's kind of a nightmare for somebody that doesn't like kids. We do, like, obedience demonstrations, and then we throw in, you know, do this with your animal, and, you know, you tell your mommy to go get your dog spayed, and you don't have puppies.
Assembly?
Yeah, an assembly. Yeah. I haven't been to school in 5 or 6 years, so I forgot what it's called. But, you know, and we could probably get the Kennel Club on board to also do that. So if you can get people lined, or those assemblies or whatever lined up, give us a call, and I'll see if I can get as many people to help you out as we can.
Okay.
Any other questions on table 3? Okay, seeing none, I've got a quick follow-up question. The number of field officers last year versus this year, you had 1,277 more calls this year than last year. How many field officers are there currently?
11.
And last year, how many were there?
Probably 11.
Same, okay.
12. I think we just lost one this morning, so it was 12.
Okay. 12. It's like you said, 25 more calls per week, and they're just doing it with the same amount of officers or less than last year. So, anyway, kudos to you guys for being able to stay up with that. I've got no more questions. I need this to be a motion to finally accept on this.
I'll make a motion.
And I will second.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Okay, thank you. Old business, staff referrals, man. Update on AKC Reunite fundraising efforts. Anything further on that, no?
We're hoping Janice is back on the feet soon and can deal with that.
How's she doing, by the way?
We don't know for sure, but we're
still rehabbing.
That she's getting out of rehab soon.
She's in rehab still. Okay.
Yeah, so hopefully, and if I can remember to get our club president to check on that, she's also worked on it, so I'll see if she can call him again. It should be any time now.
Okay.
We hope. Well,
yeah, we miss her presence. So, okay, thanks very much. Well, new business, none. So, the next item is adjourned. I need a motion to adjourn.
I'll make a motion to adjourn.
Okay, all in favor? Thank you.